one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. Welcome back to baseball after a very short break.
Yeah, woof. Welcome back indeed. Well, The Phillies and Mets were the only teams back for the second half last night in a rescheduled game. The Phillies certainly weren't ready, but Francisco Alvarez was. Everybody but the Phillies and Mets kept having an all-star break last night, but those two teams had to play at Citizens Bank Park as a fine Canadian wildfire haze settled on Philadelphia. Of course, if you're Phillies TV broadcaster Ben Davis, this is no concern at all, as he explained during the last different environmental catastrophe. I'll just read his tweet at that time. Meh, threw BP to our oldest and long tossed for 2 hours around noon. Worked out with the cellar doors wide open and went for a jog afterwards. No issues at all. It's all mental. So go ahead and tell those First Nation boats fleeing from a cloud of fire in Ontario that what they're escaping from is their own delusions, Liz. And I guess the game last night was delayed for an hour for absolutely no reason at all. But in any case, the Phillies and Mets did play a game last night. And they did say that while the wildfire smoke drifting down from Canada was present, they insisted it did not factor in the game, which was a 4-1 loss for the Phillies. Brandon Marsh saying the team just needs to play better. It was noted that he hesitated a bit to catch a line drive due to visibility issues, but he made the catch and said ultimately later that, yeah, it simply wasn't a factor. It was noted by Paul Casella on MLB.com that, and this is a really unpleasant note to share, Brandon Marsh has been a pleasant surprise, though his average dipped to .297 after going 0-4 on Thursday. It's the first time Marsh is hitting below .300 to end a day since April 28th. Well, Liz, at least we got him to the All-Star game.
This feels so familiar, doesn't it?
I'm not ready to say. He's had down weeks during this season, which, you know, culminated in his first All-Star appearance before. So I'm not saying anything's over. It was just coming back from the break can always feel a little sluggish. And this was one of those numbers that you're like, yeah, he has been a little slower lately with the bat. Doesn't mean anything's particularly over. I think there's a little bit of a downtrodden nature to Phillies fans' reentry to the season here after the All-Star game, and I think there's a lot of fresh memories of that series against the Oakland A's a couple years ago that sort of signified the beginning of a very slow decline for what had been a very promising Phillies team. I think that's kind of fresh in people's minds. And, I haven't seen a reason to fully go down that road yet, even though last night obviously wasn't the best game we've ever seen these Phillies play. But before we get to that, Liz, let's backtrack a bit and close the loop on the All-Star festivities in Philadelphia. You and I both partook in different sections of them, from FanFest, the All-Star Village at the Convention Center, to the Home Run Derby, to the All-Star Game itself. Celebrity newsletter, if anyone is subscribing to that, they framed this part of the summer as the time when Philadelphia can finally take a nap. No, not because of smoke inhalation, but because of the World Cup nearing its conclusion, the All-Star Game wrapping up, and perhaps now we may finally be able to rest. Liz, like I said, you and I spent some time at the All-Star events over the break. What were your initial thoughts for Philadelphia hosting these events for the first time in 30 years?
It was cool, you know, seeing all sorts of Philly stuff everywhere, seeing baseball stuff. Like, it was just rad. It was just neat to see baseball, you know, the center of baseball be in Philadelphia for like a week. It was neat. I mean, I wish I could say more than that, other than I like seeing the pretty signs. But the All-Star Game being in your city isn't too much more than that.
I mean, it's cool that it's our turn. That's the idea. It's like, it's our turn to finally get to do this. It's been far too long. They put it in Philadelphia this year for a reason, obviously to coincide with the 250th anniversary of America, which also had them have the awkward moment I felt at the All-Star game where they tried to get everybody to sing Happy Birthday to America between innings at one point, which was very... I cringed so hard.
I actually backed into my couch. I was part of the couch for the rest of the All-Star game. It was so terrible. The nation is not a thing that gets a birthday cake and a song. It's a living, breathing entity, though some people wish to forget that.
But I will say that, yes, I loved that it was our turn and that you got to see all the All-Star decorations and everything across the city, just reminding you that, like, yeah, this is we're getting this game for a reason. Philadelphia is a cool city that should be featured nationally at events like this. And then the events themselves, like the All-Star Village, was fun. You know, it had all the trimmings of a corporate event, as you would expect. Oh, yeah. You know, nice big Capital One logo on everything you'd try to take a picture of. But for the most part, very cool. Got to see Ferguson Jenkins. Got to see Gary Matthews. There were obviously lots of cool guests at the All-Star Village. Cool events and activities. I gravitated towards the Tops, the baseball card exhibit. That was obviously really cool.
How long did you have to wait to get in?
I only had to wait a couple of minutes. I had to wait
like a half an hour waiting in this line for the tiniest museum exhibit ever that you can only let like 20 people into at a time.
Yeah, and there were a couple of things that I probably would have done, but they had that system where you like had to reserve a spot and then get in a line, and I don't know, it just didn't feel in some cases worth it.
Yeah, one step too many for me, and like make a reservation. No, I'm here. I'm here right now. You show me a line.
But a lot of stuff is for kids, and that's yeah, excellent. And that was very cool to see lots of kids, lots of them having a great time and everything. So very cool. Very cool to see. And then the Home Run Derby, awesome. The Home Run Derby was awesome. I loved it. Citizens Bank looked great. I was at an event at Evil Genius.
Oh, yes, you were at an event, yes.
For Summer of the Cheap Wieners, I was at an event hosted by the No Bad Hops podcast, which
How'd
was
that
a lot
go?
Of fun.
It went well, I'm assuming.
Very cool. Very cool. Very good time. Everybody was very cool to meet. And then we all got to watch the Home Run Derby, and it was Woo! So much fun. I mean this to illustrate the amount of fun that it was when I say that waking up the next morning after Kyle Schwarber got close and then lost to Jordan Walker, it felt like waking up after a playoff loss. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that's the level it kind of rose to of importance. It was like, we definitely want a Philly to win. There's two of them in the contest. Like they have a better odds of winning. Schwarber is the best home run hitter in baseball. It's a home run hitting contest. It's in Philadelphia. Like this is written in the stars. We're going to see it. It's going to be cool. And then he obviously did so well, and it looked like, you know, hitting home runs in 11 out of 15 swings in the final round, it was like, all right, that ought to do it. But Jordan Walker, I mean, credit where credit's due, he did a little bit better and beat Kyle Schwarber. And
he also looked like he could have kept going, hitting home runs with no effort for like another hour. Well, I'm guessing by that point, Schwarber might have been holding his, you know, leaning over, hands on his knees, gasping.
Jordan Walker's got that lanky power. That's what we tall guys get. You know, you think we're a bunch of string beans out there, me and Jordan Walker, the same level of athletic. But we got those long forearms and that lengthy reach that can really throw you off. And yeah, Walker used that to his advantage and he did win. But you know, obviously there were that led to a lot of booing of Jordan Walker the following day. There were boos at the kids who would miss balls in the outfield when they'd land. Boos for various players who weren't on the Phillies. And I wanted to say that booing became a talking point. At the time, I was like, this is so eye-rollingly obnoxious. It's such a bad look for the people complaining that, oh, they're booing and it's mean. I actually decided I love that booing became a talking point during these festivities, because only in Philadelphia would that happen. I'm not saying only in Philadelphia would booing happen, but only in Philadelphia would people make a talking point out of it. And frankly, that's part of the fabric of the city and fabric of the sports culture here. Everyone who matters knew it was all in good fun. From the people booing, some of whom were probably not booing all in good fun, but most people booing all in good fun. The players loved it. You've never seen guys like Ben Rice, Dave Roberts, and Justin Verlander. Like, as soon as the boos start, you see a huge smile erupt across their face.
Because they know we care. They know that the people there give a crap about what's happening.
And I remember years ago, I forget who it was, there was an umpire who was retiring. And it was a regular season baseball game.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah, he gave they let him give a little speech before the game, which was interesting.
It was
on a microphone. Yeah. And then he was talking, he was like, the one thing I want is, like, give me one more round of booze here in Philly before I go. And everybody, the whole place just just booed the crap out of him, and it's what he wanted, because that's what the city gives you. And in moments where it can all be in good fun, it is. It's a lot of fun. Like, everybody enjoyed it. And then
I'm sorry, there are just some sad people on the internet who are complaining about this that make me sad in my heart, because they just don't understand joy or fun.
I really enjoyed the player intros, and I said this in a voice note I sent John Stolness for his ending episode after the All-Star game, and I really loved the player intros. They wound up being kind of the highlight of the All-Star game, which was ultimately a dud, but the transition of the boos for the players, like, went from a couple of players who were getting booed lustily, and then the camera pans over to Bryce Harper, and the transition from booing to deafening cheers, and Harper's face just lighting up, because he's like waiting to just fall back on this cushion of love and admiration from the audience after hearing all these, you know, negative quote unquote reactions to everybody else. I mean, it was great. It was part of what made it just such a good overall time. So that was awesome. We did want to talk about, you know, they changed things up for the Home Run Derby. They made it about swings instead of timing this year. And so, Liz, I don't know. I mean, did that have an effect on your enjoyment of it? And are there other changes you would want to see them make to these events in the future?
I really liked it. I thought that the timing was like an unnecessary pressure element that no one seemed to like or respond well to. Giving them some time really let everything sink in, because I remember, like, they were hitting home runs so fast, like the cheers were on top of each other. No one in the crowd, like, totally knew what to do at any time. Now they can hit the home run, watch it go, soak it in. Everyone has a chance to cheer. It makes it longer, but it's a lot more, it's not for lack of interest. Like, it's still interesting from beginning to end, you know. They actually did a good job with the broadcast itself. It was really fun. And the guys, it was Matt Vasgersian, Anthony Rizzo, and Hunter Pence. And they were like, they were going, whoa, look at that. Oh, my God. Yikes. That's wild. I'm like, that's exactly what I want to hear. I don't want to hear like a canned, you know, home run line. I want to hear these guys going, holy crap, that was the biggest home run I've ever seen. Because home runs are incredible.
I mean, I'd love to go over the top with you and be like, hey, let's like, in the second round, the players have to wear a suit of armor. Or, like, there's a part of it where they have to hit targets in the field. But ultimately, all that would just result in fewer home runs. And the players would hate it. And as far as timing versus swings being the measuring stick for the contest, I'm with you. I veer towards swings because I believe comfortable players perform better. And with the ticking clock, you get more sweating and stressing, and I want to see home runs. I mean, then again, for some guys, maybe that pressure is what fuels them. So I get that angle as well. But I do think the number of swings are worth trying again. But one thing I would like to see, I'm going to say this phrase and see how you respond to it. Mascot Home Run Derby.
Yes.
Wiffle ball, obviously, and you probably see close to no home runs. But this came to mind when they were doing, before the player intros at the All-Star game, they did the mascot intros.
and if
you think the transition from booing players to cheering Bryce Harper was strong, once they started, like, at the very beginning of introducing the American League mascots, there was just a buzz of, like, oh, he's coming, he's coming. And they're like going through these mascots. Some of them you've just never heard of. Like, people are just not familiar with the Rays mascot and the White Sox mascot.
That's not a thing, really.
The Rangers mascot is a horse. I forget his name. You know, you're going through these guys, you're getting like polite applause or whatever. And then you get to the National League, and then there's obviously some mascots who are getting very loudly booed. And obviously the Mets, Mr. Met and Mrs. Met, they're getting booed. And Blooper got really booed.
Of course,
booed.
You mean the distended flesh sack that is Blooper?
There was a story former Phillies beat writer Megan Montemuro talked about at one of the early events at the All-Star game, where Blooper was like walking down a line, like high-fiving people, and he went to high-five this little girl who was a Phillies fan, and she looked up and saw who he was and like pulled her hand back in disgust. So he couldn't high-five her. And you're like, yeah, that's why this is in Philly. That's the benefit of in Philadelphia, getting to see
beautiful
moments like that. Raising them
parents
right.
Parents raising their child right.
But of course, and then of course, the final mascot intro being the Fanatic, like that place, you know, everybody was just, the game hadn't started. It wasn't like, you know, the game that it was yet, which was pretty boring, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. But everybody was still, the buzz was in the air. Everyone was very excited. And so when they introduced the Fanatic, I mean, tens of thousands of people just threw themselves out of their seats to get a standing O for the Fanatic, who was just, he was excellent. On the idea of a mascot home run derby, I mean, I got to tell you, the Fanatic not winning a home run derby in Philadelphia might be even more debilitating than Kyle Schwarber not winning it. So, as always, the risk of emotional terrorism in baseball is ever present with any good idea.
See, that's the fear of doing the mascot home run derby in Philadelphia. No one will storm the field if Kyle Schwarber loses, because that's a real thing. Like, we can watch that. If it's the mascot home run derby, that's meaningless, and fans will storm the field and beat Mr. and Mrs. Met to death with wiffle ball bats. Slowly, but methodically, they will beat them to death.
Well, that's all in the past, or in some cases, a potential future. But now we've got some baseball to play. And the Phillies played the Mets last night, unfortunately losing 4-1 to start the second half of the season. Who better, Liz, to bring us back into the regular season than Aaron Nola? It didn't take long to remind you what the Phillies' problems are. They started this game 11 games over 500, entering play, 2 games behind the Braves in the National League East, just to remind you. Took exactly, I think, 2 batters to see Trey Turner come up short on a defensive play, but no serious trouble really surfaced until the 3rd inning, when Nola gave up a blast to Mets catcher Francisco Alvarez. Alvarez also got dinged by a bat in the 3rd, but then came back up in the 7th to hit back-to-back jacks with Brett Beatty and give New York a 3-0 lead. Trey Turner gave a comeback, a shot with a home run in the 8th to make it 3-1, but Seth Johnson gave that run right back in the 9th with a leadoff walk and an RBI double surrendered to A.J. Ewing. So Nola would do his thing. He gave up 3 homers, 6 hits, 4 walks. He did get a couple of double plays out of his defense, including a line drive caught by Bryce Harper in the 5th that let him double up Francisco Alvarez, cutting off a potential rally. But ultimately, with a quiet offense, Liz, Aaron Nola basically stands no chance. If you're not going to hit, Aaron Nola doesn't stand a chance. And it, what kind of sucks is that, like, look, I'm as big, if not bigger, Aaron Nola critic than anybody. However, if he gives up 3 runs, that's obviously still a winnable game. They can sometimes feel like bigger or more devastating runs because he's typically giving them up via the home run. But if your hitters aren't hitting or the balls aren't finding grass, I mean, you're just going to lose that game. And I don't want to make 3 runs sound insurmountable, but in Nola's case, they are basically inevitable. Like, this is the Aaron Nola issue. And like I said, his defense didn't really help either. Turner couldn't get to a ball in the 1st, which wasn't inexcusable. But his error in the 6th was much more so. So, yeah. You know, without dwelling on Nola, well, we can come back to him. Liz, with the list of things the Phillies could address at the trade deadline, has Trey Turner's defense at short started to become more of a priority? I mean, you got the right-handed outfield bat and perhaps more than one right-handed bat that you could potentially acquire. And more than one is an element that you could apply to the other needs the Phillies have too, which is some arms to fortify their rotation, some arms to improve their bullpen. But where is Trey Turner's defense and the Phillies' defense up the middle overall on your list of priorities as we approach the trade deadline on August 3rd?
I wish it were higher, but there are just too many other problems, I think, that they have to solve. Like, the defense issue is something I feel like they don't know that they could control. And in a way, that, I mean, the Phillies as a, you know, as a coaching staff, whatever, can't. Trey Turner is going to do what he does. And you have to hope that his overall talent level makes it possible that he'll get to more balls than he doesn't. But man, his age is showing, and it's really, at least we're just hoping it's his age showing and not the fact that his defensive talent or the extra part of it that made him great has sort of fallen off, like the Trey Turner train at some point is back 25 miles somewhere being pecked to death by birds.
I gotta tell you, I might at this point be willing to settle for a Trey Turner offensive resurgence. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you got to do something about that defense because it's, you know, he's making enough errors that at some point, if you're in the playoffs, a guy who's making errors at short with the frequency that he does is going to cost you something big time. So yeah. I can't get it out of my head that it's something that's got to be addressed. But like you said, there's complicating components to this, which is Trey Turner's got to play somewhere. He's got to be on the field. He's got to be in the lineup, you know, if only because he's making too much money and he's going to be here too long. He can't not be a part of the team. And I don't know if we're saying, I don't think it's out there yet that people are thinking, yeah, this is kind of like the end of Trey Turner. Like, he has declined and he's not coming back. I don't think that's the case yet, but you can't ignore the plays, the balls that just go over his glove or get misplayed or the throws that just are inaccurate to first base. I mean, you can't ignore that stuff. But like I said, him getting his head on straight at the plate would really go a long way. And hitting a home run last night, you know, hey, obviously it was in a losing effort, but it's not nothing. And it continues the small spike of success that we've started to see more from him offensively. So that is good. But boy, you got to, I think it's got to be addressed in some way. I don't know. Maybe if you do effectively address the other things, if you get a satisfying right-handed bat, I'm just throwing names out there. I'm not saying this is who or realistic, but let's say they go get like a Taylor Ward or a Joe Adell, like a right-handed hitter who comes here and perhaps even like finds the swing that they aren't even 100% using where they are now, and at a change of scenery kind of does them a little boost, which we've seen plenty of times with the Phillies specifically. So let's say like that works out. You get another bench guy to also, you know, hit right-handed and fill that role, so you feel you got a little more depth in that respect. You get a satisfyingly mediocre starting pitcher to come in and fill out your rotation. You get maybe like a swing man of sorts who hasn't been putting up terrible numbers. And then you get a couple of arms for the bullpen. Again, how this goes down and what you're giving up, not really thinking about that. But in this case, if you do manage to pull all that stuff off, maybe that's enough to survive an issue like Trey Turner's defense at short, because ultimately I don't think the Phillies can solve all of these problems mid-season right now.
Not.
They can't. No, you got to figure out a way. What's survivable? What can we live with? Like, what can we strengthen to outpace the remaining weaknesses? And I think that's exactly generally going to be the outlook.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, like Trey Turner's defense, while it is and probably will cost the Phillies somewhere in an important spot, that to me, if he can actually hit better, because he's currently hitting .236, which sucks. Like, right out loud, that sucks. And if he was hitting better, the defense is something you can not overlook, but it can, you can shuffle it off to the side a little because he's producing somewhere else and maybe even making up for some of his errors, but he's not doing that. That's the biggest problem. Like, you, and that's also the problem with getting someone else in, even if you move him around. It's like you're just replacing his defense when the offensive ceiling of whoever that is isn't going to be as high. But then again, is Trey Turner's ceiling that high if we haven't even seen it this season?
I feel like I'm negotiating, and I don't even know who I'm negotiating with reality, I guess.
It's
but
a
like,
hostage situation, and like we've just been dropped into it like a video game.
Let's say they get a big right-handed bat, but only one. They get a mediocre arm for the rotation, but only one. And then they get a couple of guys who aren't the sexiest names, but are some new guys in the bullpen. And then Trey Turner hits like .280 the rest of the season. Maybe that's enough. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That could be enough.
But I mean, you know, what reason do we have to think any of these specifically will happen? You know, other than we know what's wrong, we're going to find out what the Phillies make right. So yeah, that's what lies ahead. But speaking of the rotation, I mean, you know, just to circle back, Aaron Nola, you know, he had an Aaron Nola start, really. Like I said, gave up 3 homers, allowed 4 walks. I guess you're lucky that when you give up 4 walks and 6 hits, that all the home runs you gave up were solo shots. So that's good, I guess. And like I said, the game wasn't out of the Phillies' hands by any stretch.
No, at no point. Aaron Nola kept them in it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, if Don Mattingly had not let Aaron Nola convince him that he was good for another inning, which is what I'm going to assume happened, and, you know, if he let him go just 6, we'd be saying a lot of other, I think we'd be saying very different things about Aaron Nola. I'm actually pretty happy with his start. Pitchers have a hard time controlling home runs, and Aaron Nola is very special in that he has a very hard time controlling home runs. He might have no control over them at all. But, like, just 3 solo shots is decent. Like, 3 runs over, you know, 6 1/3 or however many it was, you know, for your ostensible number 4 starter at this point, like, that's good. And that's, it's, the Phillies are looking a gift horse in the mouth. What are they doing?
He's like, number 4 starter because they only really have 4 starters at this point.
I know.
So.
God. Jeez.
Yeah.
They wasted what was a pretty decent Aaron Nola start. Like, if they can't score at least 3 runs, what are we doing?
I liked Don Mattingly. You're kind of watching him wrap his head around the chaos cloud that is Aaron Nola, where he was like, so I took him out too early in the last start. I left him in too long this time. Like, this is baseball. Like, not sure what button to push at this point. Like, that's just, it's Aaron Nola. You can't get it right. You got to just, yeah. I mean, you got to, if your exactly. offense isn't coming, you don't have a shot. That's it. If the offense isn't working, there's just no shot to win an Aaron Nola start. And, you know, I'm not saying that's even fair, because I guess you could say in a Zach Wheeler start and a Christopher Sanchez start, there's always the chance they throw 7-8 shutout innings. And that's like, having no offense, you can still win that game. You can win a 1-0 game with Zach Wheeler or Christopher Sanchez on the mound. And perhaps even with Jesus Luzardo, who, by the way, probably gave the best performance of any Phillies all-star. He was in the game felt like 30 seconds because, and I noted this in my segment on the last episode of Hidden Season, but I think the hitters all got a note after Christopher Sanchez's long first inning to just go ahead and swing away. Let's move this thing along. Everybody was just swinging nonstop. And Luzardo, I think, benefited from that, but also pitched very well and efficiently and was in and out of the game very quickly because, you know, he got outs. He got 3 quick outs.
1-2-3, baby.
So even he could strike out like 13 guys and get you through a start on occasion without much of an offense. But Nola can't do that. He just can't. And you gotta be prepared
support.
For that. Yeah, exactly. Well, Mets starter Christian Scott, like I said, kept the Phillies quiet. He went 5 2/3 with 7 strikeouts, 3 hits, no walks, and no runs. Phillies had 4 hits on the night, which, like we said, isn't gonna get the job done.
No.
So, starting the second half, not with a bang, but more of a soft thud. What'd you make of the Phil's return, Liz?
A soft thud. I mean, I didn't, until the notification came up on my phone, I'm like, wait a minute, they're playing at 6 o'clock on ESPN on a Thursday? I was just like, it took me a second. It wasn't, no one else is playing either. I'm like, this is stupid. And the game just bore itself out from there. It really was just, it was annoying and frustrating to watch. The Phillies just didn't, they just didn't have anything. And even when you, even the Trey Turner home run, like, I was bringing some plates upstairs after dinner, and I saw over my shoulder that he hit a home run. And I said that to my husband upstairs, and he was like, yeah, and? And I'm like, that's just the game this is, because it's just like, we can see the offense has got really nothing. So unless there's anyone else up there who's ready to hit, we assumed the game was lost and turned it off, and then we were right.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Coming into the season, I think much was made about this post All-Star break gauntlet the Phillies kind of have thrown in front of them, in that you looked at the schedule and thought, oh my gosh, coming out of the All-Star break in Philly, they're going to play the Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees all at home right in a row, and that's going to be pretty rough. And now here we are, you know, through the All-Star break, the Mets, obviously they won last night, but the Mets are clearly having not the season that they planned on having. They're not having the season that I think even any of us thought they were going to have. They are much worse than anybody would have predicted. They have been living in the basement of the National League East for quite some time now, and it's really not even particularly close, Liz. The Mets are 15.5 games out of first place even after winning last night. They're 11.5 games out of a wild card spot. That alone puts them 7.5 games out of fourth place, Liz. That's how far the Nationals are ahead of the Mets in fourth place. So that actually doesn't really make for much of a gauntlet. But however, the Phillies do have to play the Dodgers and Yankees at home after this Mets series concludes on Sunday. And then they go to Miami to play a Marlins team that's much tougher than I think anybody thought they were going to play. So that's the real gauntlet. Take the Mets out and add the Marlins. That's kind of the tough part at this point. Three in Miami versus tough Marlins team that really wants to overtake the Phillies in the NL East after facing the Yankees and Dodgers. How do you see these next nine games going for the Phillies?
After seeing this game, I am a bit concerned after Christopher Sanchez's performance at the All-Star game. I am a little concerned. I don't like that feeling. I'm not saying I'm worried. I'm not saying I'm freaking out. I'm just like there's a little light dinging back of my head. I want to make sure I pay attention to it so it's not unexpected if something happens. Now I've forgotten the question.
How do you think the next nine games are going to go against the Mets, Dodgers, Yankees?
I'm worried. I'm a little worried, especially like the Marlins are frightening. I've been watching them come up from behind and they're stalking, they're hunting, they're ready. I think they see the Phillies have sort of a soft belly and are ready to get into it. So that's a series I'm actually worried about. I had to look up and see how the Yankees are doing. They're not as bad as I thought. I thought for some reason like they were hideously terrible this year, but the Rays are much better than I expected. So I don't know what to make of the Yankees entirely, but I mean, I'm hoping it's a good series that the Phillies win. What I want, you know, from an American League series for it to be entertaining. From a National League series, what I want is for the Phillies to beat whatever team that they're playing, you know, into a fine paste. But I don't think that's going to happen with the Dodgers.
I'll tell you what's really on the Yankees' minds right now is Aaron Judge getting imaging on his right rib. He was not in the All-Star game due to injury concerns. They discovered a stress fracture there about 6 weeks ago. So they're trying to figure out when he will come back to the Yankees at this point. So that's going to be haunting New York, I think, for the moment, and be a factor in any team that's playing them in the near future. So that's something to keep in mind. I'll tell you what. I think starting the second half this way really comes down to luck of where the rotation was. If this was a Zach Wheeler start, I think it goes differently. I think...
Oh, yeah.
You know, and suddenly they're coming off what I think is more likely to be a win, and we're thinking differently about everything. I'm not really factoring in Christopher Sanchez's performance in the All-Star game because it's the All-Star game. You could see he was like maybe a little amped up and leaving pitches where he shouldn't. But again, also, it's an exhibition game. I would have rather him had an immaculate inning and struck out all three guys on nine pitches he faced, but you didn't get that. You really didn't get much from any of the Phillies in the All-Star game, to be totally honest. But regardless, I'm not going to use that as a source of concern. And Aaron Nola pitched a game exactly like Aaron Nola has pitched a game, and to be honest, it's probably one of his better starts. Yeah. So I'm not going to use that as evidence yet that the team is in some sort of free fall or decline. Not yet. And I'll even say it was a massive relief to me to see the Marlins lose three straight going into the All-Star break. The 1.5 games they're behind the Phillies was like, okay, we can breathe. Like that they were really nipping at their heels, and like that feels like a wider gap, as narrow as it is, than the Marlins have allowed recently. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty all right. And the next 2 days we'll see Sean Manaea taking on Jesus Luzardo at 4:05 on Saturday, and then on Sunday in the matinee you're going to get Nolan McLean first versus that fifth spot, that glorious fifth spot in the Phillies rotation, in Alan Rangel getting the start. So, I mean, I'll just say out loud here that I think the pressure's on Jesus Luzardo to win that game because win that Saturday game, because not feeling great about the Sunday game because the Phillies are not getting a whole lot out of that role that's being filled by Alan Rangel right now. And, you know, coming off this break and losing this series, I think that's going to get some negative reactions from people, even though I will maintain that I'm not completely pulling my hair out yet. I think this team's got some ball to play, and there's no reason to think that anything that was working is over, though there are still flaws that need to be corrected, for sure. Speaking of corrections, the AI menace, Liz, it has it has come to baseball. I don't know if you noticed this, but Eno Saris reports in The Athletic, in a crackdown that has rankled some front offices across the league, Major League Baseball has effectively outlawed the growing practice of using league-provided dugout iPads to access generative artificial intelligence, which some teams had increasingly leaned upon to help shape in-game strategy. According to a commissioner's office memo obtained by The Athletic, teams were pushing the boundaries of guidelines governing the use of technology by, in many cases, installing custom apps that expanded the use of the iPads. Can you imagine they were using iPods? Phillies would be using iPods. But the use of the iPads beyond their originally intended purpose to include recommendations regarding substitutions, pitch calling, and other in-game decisions traditionally made by players and coaches. Boy, oh boy. That description sure makes you wonder, why show up at the ballpark at all? If you're going to be there asking AI what substitution you should make, what pitch you should throw, what are you doing there at all? Like, at some, we kind of got to this point pretty quickly. If that was the situation, I'm glad to see them ban this kind of stuff, because at some point you got to just show up and play the game, right? Like, that, this seems ridiculous. I am not a great AI person. I am not an advocate. I understand that it has useful purposes. I see far more of its harmful usages than its useful purposes. So I got to tell you, this is something that just seems absolutely stupid to me.
You know, people 20, 30 years ago were really afraid of the overtaking of numbers from like decision making, you know, having numbers make your decisions instead of people. And that's not what was happening. It was people using numbers to make decisions. Sometimes they were taking that to an extreme, but it was still people making decisions. And as we've seen over the years, the use of numbers has, you know, sort of evened out with like the personal touch and, you know, like actual visual decision and, you know, experiential decision making. Now for AI, it's like, let's get rid of humans completely. And that's what this is. And I'm shocked that there hasn't been more outrage over this. Like, even with what there's been, I feel that there should be more, because this is what people had been fearing. And now it's like MLB is having to step in to make sure it doesn't come true. Like, this is one of the only good things MLB has done in God knows how long. Like, this is a good thing that they've done to get rid of this, because even they understand, whether or not it's about unfair advantage, they know it's not something they can control. And if they can't control what teams can do on their iPads with apps and stuff, then they're not going to let anybody do it. Because it was really easy for the Astros back in 2017 to cheat without any of that. All they used was garbage cans, like trash can lids. Like, this has the potential to be even, this has the actual potential to give teams an advantage with stuff that other teams can't even imagine. And I think that this is such a good thing. It's a very weird feeling to say that MLB has done a good thing, but they've done a good thing, because I don't want to pay $80 for a crappy seat and, you know, like a mildly warm hot dog to see machines make the decisions when I came here to say players do everything. Players and coaches and humans.
I will never claim to be some sort of master baseball strategist, but boy, if you're too stupid to know who to put into a game, if you really aren't there to make that decision and you got to ask an AI to do it for you, you have no business being in that dugout. Like, get out of here. This is absolutely ridiculous. And it's the kind of thing that if you or I had suggested this 10, 20 years ago, they would have slapped you in the face. Yep. They would have laughed you out of the room. They would have been like, oh, what's happening to my sport? Now they're doing it, and we're sitting here going like, what is the point if this is how you're going to approach your strategy? Just, oh, well, just put it into the iPad and let it tell us how to play the game. Ridiculous.
And I have to wonder if coaches are actually happy to have this out. I wonder if some of them probably are, because if front offices are unhappy with, you know, this being banned, it's because they were telling their coaching staffs to use it. You know, maybe there's some out there who are like, yeah, let's have someone who's not me, the paid expert, make my decisions for me. I'm sure they were. I'm sure there is a not insignificant number of them who are thrilled that this crap is banned, because what else are they there for? They are there to coach a team.
Agreed. You mentioned the Astros. You mentioned the Astros. This is just your occasional reminder that, according to Bob Nightingale, Alex Cora was already offered the Phillies managing job before Don Mattingly got it. And he's written about how it's pretty expected that Alex Cora could become the Phillies manager after this season, despite Don Mattingly recently saying he might be interested in taking the job on full term. And I'll just remind everybody that in Evan Drellich's book, Winning Fixes Everything, it details how Alex Cora, an architect, or at least braggart of the Astros sign-stealing system from 2017, would, quote, occasionally talk about the Astros sign-stealing from 2017, even brag, sometimes in a late-night setting. He would even brag that we stole that expletive World Series, according to the book. So that's who Bob Nightingale says is in line to be the next Phillies manager. Pretty cool stuff.
Let's keep reminding people about that loudly and often.
Well, we've got a couple more weeks of regular season baseball ahead of us in the rest of July, August, and September as the Phillies approach the trade deadline and adjust for the postseason run. Let's look to tweak some of the issues that they've had and address some of the flaws that we've all seen on display this season. But they're also 10 games over 500 after the 4-1 loss last night to the Mets. They got a bunch more games at home here to start the second half where, honestly, Liz, there's not a huge difference between the Phillies playing at home or on the road. They've played a little more on the road, but they're 29 and 22 on the road. They're now 25 and 22 at home. So this is not a team like in the past we've seen have huge differences between their home and away play. So it's good to, you know, it feels like, you know, it always feels like an advantage to play at Citizens Bank Park. Maybe not when there's like a wildfire smoke issue, but regardless, where isn't that an issue right now? Yeah, they got a couple more games at home against some tough teams before hitting the road down to Miami to take on another tough team. And then I think it's Baltimore. Then I think they're in Baltimore to take on the Orioles, a team that is less than tough this year and is one of those teams you see on lists of teams that really have to start the second half hot. But we'll see what the Phillies can do here. They got plenty of good players and plenty of promise, and we got plenty more baseball to talk about as the season goes on. So stick with Hittin' Season. You get 3 episodes a week wherever you get your podcasts. But that'll do it for this episode. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. Got a new Dirty Inning up late last night on John Denny and a couple of games leading up to his 1983 Cy Young season. So that was a lot of fun. So head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season for more Phillies content. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.